I mean, I remember the early days of the Civil Rights Movement. Walked down the street scared, didn't know what was going to happen, and now look where we are. I never thought I'd see the day that this thing would get so mellow that white folks would start asking me to comment on white folk problems. I came back in from Europe last month, CNN. Mr. Gregory, you think we'll ever catch Bin Laden? I say, we. I ain't looking for him. I'm still trying to find out who my daddy is. Bob Hope. A lot of you young folks don't remember Bob Hope. Bob Hope lived to get 104. He died at 3 o'clock in the morning. AP called me. Mr. Gregory, Bob Hope just died. Can we get a comment on you? I said, I thought he'd been dead. Then what'd you say? I said, my comment is Bob Hope's family should go to Chicago and get on their knees and kiss Jesse Jackson's feet. Because for 40 years, Jesse been yelling, keep Hope alive. And he the only comment that lived to get 104. I saw Jesse the other day. Jesse said, Brother Greg, now that Bob Hope has died, let me pray for you. How you gonna run around talking about keep Dick alive?
Dick Gregory was an influential figure in the world of comedy and activism. Born on October 12, 1932, in St. Louis, Missouri, Gregory began his career as a stand-up comedian in the 1950s. His unique style blended humor with social and political commentary, tackling issues such as racism, discrimination, and social injustice. Gregory's comedy often challenged the status quo and exposed the inequalities faced by Americans during the Civil Rights Movement. He used his platform to shed light on the struggles of marginalized communities, using humor as a tool to provoke thought and inspire change. His performances not only were entertaining, they also served as a catalyst for social awareness and activism. Beyond comedy, Gregory was deeply involved in the civil rights movement. He participated in numerous protests, marches, and sit-ins, advocating for racial equality and justice. His activism spread beyond racial issues, though, as he spoke out against the Vietnam War, nuclear weapons, and other social and political concerns. Gregory's commitment to social justice led him to run for political office. In 1968, he became the first African American to launch a major presidential campaign, representing the Freedom and Peace Party. Although his campaign was not successful, it marked a significant milestone in African-American political representation. Throughout his life, Gregory remained dedicated to fighting for justice and equality. He wrote several books, including his autobiography, Nigger, an Autobiography, in 1963, which became a bestseller. He also continued to perform stand-up comedy using humor to address important issues and challenge societal norms. Dick Gregory's impact on comedy and activism cannot be overstated. He paved the way for future comedians and activists to use their platforms to bring about social change. His work continues to inspire and educate, reminding us of the power of laughter and the importance of speaking up against injustice. Dick Gregory passed away on August 19th, 2017, leaving behind a legacy of courage, wit, and unwavering commitment to making the world a better place. What most people don't know is that Dick Gregory was also the first truther. On November 22nd, 1963, the day of the Kennedy assassination, while listening to the coverage on the radio and TV, Dick Gregory began tape recording the coverage and noticed discrepancies in the stories that were being reported on the assassination. He immediately began to suspect that a cover-up was taking place, and from that day on, he became obsessed with uncovering the truth. In March 1975, Dick Gregory appeared on the television show Good Night America with Geraldo Rivera, along with Robert Groden and several other Kennedy assassination researchers. Robert Groden worked as a film developer for a company that developed the Zapruder film for Time Life magazine after it was sold to them by Abraham Zapruder. Robert Groden made a copy of the film for himself in secret while developing the film's negative. Dick Gregory assisted Robert Groden in bringing his secret copy of the Zapruder film to Geraldo, who then showed it on Good Night America, giving the public their first glimpse of the moment of Kennedy's death, which led to Hollywood special effects creators being able to create more accurate headshot depictions in films. Dick Gregory went on to expose many conspiracies, crimes, and injustices, but enabling the people to see the Zapruder film for the first time will probably always stand as his greatest triumph.
That the day Kennedy was getting his head blown off in Dallas, all the telephone communication system was blown out in Washington, D.C., and press didn't report it. I find it very strange that the day Kennedy was being shot in Dallas, that everybody in his cabinet, except Robert Kennedy, was on a plane on their way to Tokyo. And when the message was transferred to the plane, McNamara didn't know what it was because the code book had been left off the plane.
Do you think the two Kennedy assassinations, the Martin Luther King assassination and the Wallace attempt, were all linked and possibly linked by the CIA?
I think so, and I think it can be proven.
Dick Gregory is one of America's foremost comedians, but it would really be a grave injustice to leave his introduction with that one simple statement, because he's a complex man, a humanitarian who lectures and writes extensively in the interest of human rights and social justice. His comedy doesn't just make people laugh, it makes them think as well. Please welcome Dick Gregory. I think of myself as being a person with a pretty high energy level, but nothing compared to you. I mean, how many concert gigs did you do? How many appearances at colleges did you do last year?
I make about 310 every 10 months.
Oh, man. How do you find the energy, the strength to do it? It's incredible. You must live half your life in an airplane.
Half my life in an airplane, but I don't eat. You know, that's the, when I eat, I
that's
find out
secret.
My energy.
That's logical. How did you get involved in the circumstances concerning and surrounding the death of President Kennedy?
Well, I've been involved with it since the first day, accidentally. I was at home, and when the news came over the wire that President Kennedy had been shot, I thought that had we had radio and the communication system when Abraham Lincoln was shot, how valuable would tapes be, 1963, of Lincoln. So I put on all my radios, all my televisions, and started taping. About 4 hours into taping, I start hearing the same people being interviewed again, and what they said the first time had changed. And the only common denominator was that they had talked to the Secret Service. And from that point on, I was a little suspicious of what was happening. Not too much, but then when I started listening to the theories that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assailant, and then things start coming out that we didn't know before, that the parade route had been changed. And then when you find out that Lee Harvey Oswald, the day that President Kennedy made the announcement he was going to Dallas, and right after that, he got a job at the Book Depository. Now, if the parade route wasn't planned on going that way, then he had set himself up in the wrong location, or he knew something. Now, if Lee Harvey Oswald do not have the ability and the power and the rank and position to change the parade route, then who did? And from that point, I started, you know, really looking into it. I met a very brilliant gentleman in London at the time named Ralph Shunman, who had also been looking into it. And as I started meeting various people that was looking for something else, I found out that there was a whole, like, occult out here that didn't believe it. But we just kept looking and kept waiting for the press. And then when they said they would have the Warren Commission, this stopped everything because we knew that these loose ends would be tied in, and they never were.
I want to introduce another guest we have, Robert Groden, who is celebrating his 18th birthday on the 22nd of November in 1963. He was profoundly touched by the president's death, and he desperately wanted to understand how it could have happened. For 2 years, he, like most Americans, believed in the official version, the Warren Commission version of what happened, but the day he first saw that 8mm Zapruder film, that amateur film that was made, that was the day he stopped believing. Robert, welcome, and I wish you could set up the Zapruder film a bit for us, and we'll get right into it.
Okay. Abraham Zapruder was a Dallas dress manufacturer, and it was pure accident that he brought the camera with him that day. He almost didn't. And he was looking for a good vantage point, and he picked a point on Elm Street in Dealey Plaza in downtown Dallas. As the motorcade passed in front of him, he got what is frame for frame the most valuable historical document of all time.
It's become very chic among television producers to put a disclaimer at the head of any film. The film you're about to see might be shocking, it might be horrifying, you might not want your kids to watch it. And I think the unfortunate net effect of that is to make more people watch it. Well, I'm telling you right straight out that if you are at all sensitive, if you're at all queasy, then don't watch this film. Just put on the late night movie because this is very heavy. It's the film shot by the Dallas dress manufacturer Abraham Zapruder, and it's the execution of President Kennedy. And Bob and Dick, would you please narrate what we're seeing as we show this film?
This is commercial footage leading into Dealey Plaza. This is the car on Main Street.
So this film was taken by actual newsmen. This was spliced together with the Abraham Zapruder film.
Yes.
All right, so this is the beginning of the motorcade.
Okay, what you're seeing now is in slow motion so that you can grasp what is happening. This is a film taken by Marie Muchmore that leads into the Zapruder film. It's for time continuity. The president is waving to the crowd here.
And Jacqueline Kennedy, of course, is sitting alongside him in the open car.
Right. This is from Orville Nix's film. This is originally 8mm footage. And they're heading now toward Elm Street. They're on Houston Street now. They're going to make a left-hand turn. It's on the corner where they're going to make the turn there that the book depository was. Now, this is the Zapruder film.
Okay, so the cars are coming along now into Dealey Plaza?
Yes, these are the lead motorcycles of the motorcade.
All right, now with the president and Mrs. Kennedy is also Governor Connally.
Right. Now, before he goes behind the sign, the president is waving to the crowd. When he comes out from behind the sign, he is shot, then Governor Connally is shot.
He's already been hit.
He's already been hit.
And now? And
at the bottom of the screen, the headshot.
That's the shot that blew off his head. It's the most horrifying thing I've ever seen in the movies.
Now, the Warren Commission said that all of the shots were fired from behind by Lee Harvey Oswald, a lone assassin, firing at the president. And as you can see, clearly, the head is thrown violently backwards, completely consistent with the shot from the front, right. Now, this is an extreme blow-up of just the president from the film.
All right.
Coming out behind the sign, he's shot.
He's hit from
the hit here.
From the front, too.
From the front. Now, Jackie doesn't realize what's happened yet. She goes to his aid.
And now? He's hit
again. The violent backward motion, totally consistent with 80% of the witnesses, which said the shot came from the grassy knoll in front and to the right.
It's interesting to note how many people is running towards where most folks thought the shots came from.
The head goes backwards in the next film from the other side of the street.
Oh, God, that's awful. That's the most upsetting thing I've ever seen. We'll talk about it in a minute. We've been joined, as you can see, by a man named Ralph Schoenemann. He's a writer and historian who's been studying and investigating the president's assassination for 11 or 12 years now. Ralph, I wish you could start by giving us the Warren Commission version, the official version, the version that so far has been written into the history books about what happened, and then tell us your reasons for feeling that that was not the way it really happened.
Well, Geraldo, as you know, the official view is that Lee Harvey Oswald is the lone assassin and fired all the fatal shots from behind. The film that you've just seen is the irrefutable answer to that fiction. But beyond that, the actual testimony and the exhibits of the Warren Commission are one-to-one contradiction to the official report. And that concerns all of the principals, Jack Ruby, all of the people that they interrogate. Indeed, what we find is that the common theme uniting the people in Watergate and in the Bay of Pigs operation and in Dallas, the execution of John Kennedy, is counterintelligence, the Central Intelligence Agency.
The CIA.
CIA.
All right, now I'm going to play the role of the devil's advocate here and say that we've heard all these conspiracy theories before. Be specific if you have an allegation to make and you have documentation to back it up. For instance, Harvey Oswald is generally known to have been a communist, slightly or massively, as it turns out, I guess, deranged. Do you have evidence saying that he wasn't a communist?
Lee Harvey Oswald was an agent of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Prove it.
He had been at Sugi Air Force Base in the Marines with high security clearance. Indeed, there is a Secret Service report, which the Warren report chooses not to discuss, Secret Service report number 767, which refers to Alan Sweat, Chief Criminal Division of the Sheriff's Office in Dallas, who discusses the FBI number of Lee Harvey Oswald, S-172, and the document makes reference to a Central Intelligence Agency number for Oswald, number 110669. Now, leaving aside the matter of the authenticity of the information in the Secret Service report, what's important is that the Warren report chooses to ignore all of the relevant evidence concerning the CIA role of Oswald. There are 51 documents pertaining to CIA intelligence and Lee Harvey Oswald, which are consigned to the National Archives, not to be opened for 75 years as of the killing of John Kennedy. The very least that must be demanded by any investigating body, and certainly the Rockefeller Commission, which is supposed to be investigating the domestic role of CIA, is to subpoena and demand those documents to be shown to the American people.
Jack Ruby is the restaurateur who killed Lee Harvey Oswald on national television.
Right.
He said according to the summation of the Warren Commission, that he acted solely because of grief that this great man, John Kennedy, had been assassinated, and he sought to take revenge.
That's a very good example of how the Warren Report has totally fabricated the truth. The actual statements of Jack Ruby bear no relation to the Warren Report's summation of them. In Volume 5 of the very exhibits and documents of the Warren Commission, we find the verbatim testimony of Jack Ruby. And in that testimony, he states that he can't tell the truth in Dallas. He wants to be taken to Washington. He says, "You'll never see me alive if you don't get me out of Dallas."
He says that to?
Yes, he says that to Chief Justice Earl Warren and to Gerald Ford and Leon Jaworski, who were present at the time.
They were on the Warren Commission.
Ford was a member of the Warren Commission, and Leon Jaworski was one of its counsels. Now, in this discussion, Ruby at one point states, "You could say that Lee Harvey Oswald didn't shoot John Kennedy. Jack Ruby did." He says, "You'll never see me alive again if you don't get me to Dallas."
That's verbatim.
This is from the testimony. It starts pages 181, goes to 212, volume 5. And that's not only the testimony contained in the exhibits of the Warren Report, but we have the testimony of the doctor of Jack Ruby, who has disclosed the documents that he had prepared about his discussions and his treatment of Ruby, and it was published in the London Sunday Times this year. And these documents are a report of a series of confidential examinations carried out on Ruby while he was in Dallas County Jail. And Ruby states categorically that he was involved in a plot to kill John Kennedy, that he shot Oswald upon receiving a phone call from Fort Worth, and he says his last words to the doctor were, I do not want to die, but I am not insane, I was framed to kill Oswald."
Now Ruby, according again to official history, contracted a cold while in prison, and approximately 24 hours later he died
of lung cancer,
right.
Rather an extraordinary timing, considering that he was just about to have a hearing in which his sanity at the time of the murder of Oswald was to be assessed, when Ruby would have had an opportunity in public court to advance his views as he attempted to express them to the Warren Commission.
Your basic point is that the CIA is the common denominator linking all these people together.
Well, that's not a question of my point. That's what the FBI reports and the commission documents and exhibits show.
Have you told this to anyone? Official power position.
For starters, I told this to Charles Olson, an investigator for the Rockefeller Commission.
The commission investigating the CIA.
Yes, the official commission, from which we do not expect great things, but we do intend to embarrass them with the facts, and of course to present this data both to congressional committees and across the United States, to college audiences and to the public as best we can. The Central Intelligence Agency, particularly counterintelligence, constantly appears in the lives of these disparate people. They're all connected to it. For example, when James Angleton resigned as head of counterintelligence on Christmas Day, he made the rather extraordinary statement quoted in the New York Times on December 25th. He said, "There were many rooms in the mansion. I wasn't privy to who struck John." Well, I think we ought to know who he thinks was privy to who struck John.
Thank you. It's very unsettling. Thank you for being on the show. I might say, just as an addendum, that we tried to get a spokesman from the Rockefeller Commission to come on the program. They said it was not propitious to comment at this time. We'll be right back. Aren't you frightened sometimes that someone's going to try and hurt you?
No, I tell you, I have a wife and 10 kids, and if something happened to all of us, America's bigger than we are. And if the assassination of President Kennedy is reopened and the truth is found out, my family and myself is very insignificant. What scares me the most is the amount of decent American people who have called me, sent me letters, who meet me in airports and say, wow, I heard about what you're into, they're gonna kill you. The fact that we live in a free democratic society and our super subconscious, we admit that there is an organization that will kill you. And I would say that I'm outraged, not at the CIA, not at the murderers. I'm outraged over the fact that the American press should be doing what we are doing today. There are thousands of researchers that have as much, if not more, than what you heard us say. We were just fortunate enough to wiggle it through and slip it to the American people. And I would like to see the American press, even the press that say everything we have is not true, to come out and do the research and let the American people know, was it a trick? Was it a conspiracy? And let's open up the Warren Report. Let's talk about a new investigation for the 200th anniversary of America. And if we don't, I think this country's going to be in a lot of trouble.
Right. When I had finished reading through the recent news stories on the renewed interest in the assassination of President Kennedy, because there is real renewed interest, my first response was to ask if there was any new evidence that either a conspiracy existed or, more generally, that Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't acting alone on that November day in 1963 when President Kennedy was killed and the new frontier was closed. My reaction now, after listening to Dick and to Bob and to Ralph and seeing that incredible and very horrifying film, is to ask what's wrong with the old evidence. The official explanation of the Warren Commission that Oswald was acting alone is just so difficult to reconcile with the evidence that exists today. Now, if you can remember back and be honest to when all these theories about conspiracies first came out in the mid-60s, then we treated the researchers and the people doing this investigation as kind of paranoid kooks. I mean, let's be honest, that's the way it was. But now we've all lived through the Pentagon Papers, Watergate, dirty tricks, and even the allegations, and I stress the point that they're only allegations, that the CIA and the FBI, institutions that are so solid in American history and the fabric of American society, have engaged in illegal operations against American citizens. Well, because of all that, I think that most people are now more willing to listen to opposing points of view. I think one thing is certain. There are just too many loose ends. John Kennedy was murdered, and we at least owe him the duty of doing everything possible to find out who all was involved. Now, possibly, just possibly, the Warren Commission was right, and it was just the act of a single madman, however unlikely that seems now. But what if it wasn't? With the perspective of more than 11 years of history between then and now, an intensive official investigation could and should be launched. Even if there's just one chance in 1,000 or even one chance in 1,000,000 that the assassination was more than we were told it was. That's it. That's it for now. Dick, thank you really.
Thank you very much
for being with us. Thank all of you all for being here and for watching. I want to thank Raquel and all the guests that we've had tonight. The next edition of Good Night America is on the 27th of March. Until then, peace and good night, America.
Arlen Specter, former assistant counsel to the Warren Commission, will be a guest on the next edition of Good Night America, and will comment on the film and the assassination of President Kennedy that you've just seen.
Queen turned 90.
Hmm?
The Queen just turned 90. That was a big celebration. And coincidentally, it was the same day that Prince passed away.
And it was the same day she was here in Washington, D.C. Mm. Front page of the Washington Post. Mm. Got her family dressed in pink.
Mm.
purple. And that's when she announced that Charles won't get, it's going to skip over him and point to the little boy, the prince. The same day they killed Prince. Yeah. They killed Prince on the plane. And that plane is owned by Warren Buffett. So those are the games they play, man.
Well, let's talk about Prince, because you knew Prince, right?
No, he knew me.
Okay.
He talked about me because of the... I don't hang out with entertainers. Okay. But there's no way that now to come out till he died from AIDS. Okay? Well, remember, the night that he died the next day, he was on the plane. That same night they put him on the plane, he did a one-man concert at 8 o'clock and then another one. You saw it? Did it look like he was dying from AIDS?
No.
Okay, this case closed.
Why did they want him dead now?
See, you ask me shit that I don't qualify to answer.
Okay.
Why did they want him dead now? Huh?
I'm asking.
Because the white folks that killed him, they're not like niggas and ignorant white folk. I'll kill you, motherfucker. They'd do it 10 years later. Now, if I had to guess, I think when he went into that record company and talked to them folks with that slave thing on it, that's what got him killed. Mm-hmm. They don't kill no nigga for no money. That ain't nothing but chump change he got. Chump change.
So, like a lot of people are saying, he had gotten the rights to his recordings.
He got the what?
The rights to his master recordings.
Well, they tell you that so you can repeat it. How you know?
He had said it.
Huh?
He had said it. His lawyer.
How you know that was him? How you know who the fucking lawyers was? Huh?
Okay.
Huh? That's where you see you talking to the master, but I got the listeners. You know how many agents? The number one government agent is the mayor of Chicago's brother. Huh? Okay. Ain't nothing but CIA. Huh? So y'all come with this little weak shit. Huh?
Well, I'm just curious.
No, you can't be curious out of ignorance.
Okay.
Huh?
All right. So...
I just told you what I thought.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But they're going to tell you the motherfucker didn't have no insurance, no will, but they got motherfuckers do his hair before he go out on stage. Mm-hmm. Motherfuckers switch the back of his clothes, make sure ain't no lint on it. But they can convince you he didn't have no goddamn... If you hate all your family, you do what that woman did, the billionaire woman in New York, Hensley, left it to her goddamn dog. But y'all can't even see that because these crackers told you about the nigger. Huh? It's a game. It's a fucking game, man. And the most important thing, the plane he was on is owned by Warren Buffett. He's the one who rented the planes.
So there were pictures that TMZ circulated, supposedly of Prince riding a bicycle and waiting outside of a Walgreens.
I'm surprised you asked me that. I mean, this is for the people. That was after he came back from Atlanta. Day before he died, outside the compound, and you didn't see no crowds around the motherfucker. Hey, Prince, huh? Then who in the fuck is TMZ?
They're owned by Time Warner.
And who in the fuck is Time Warner?
His old record company.
Huh?
His old record company.
Okay. Okay, it's close. It's a game. We even investigated the fucking mayor. The mayor of that little town said he ain't never met Prince. Okay? Okay. It's a game, man.
So, I mean, the last thing on that, I know Tavis Smiley, after Prince
Huh?
After Prince passed, Tavis Smiley said that he introduced you to Prince and that you had talked.
He introduced me to a show I did. Mm-hmm. I've never met Prince.
Okay.
I don't hang out with entertainers nor athletes.
Okay. So he saw when you did the State of the Black Union
address
and talked about the chemtrails.
Mm-hmm.
You turned him on to something. So.
Truth don't have to be validated by ignorance. I don't have to be validated, especially by an entertainer.
Two other things. Since we last talked, I know you said that Michael Jackson, his passing, he was killed, but it had nothing to do with the Sony catalog, but the estate just sold the rights back to the Beatles catalog back.
That didn't happen until after he was dead. Mm-hmm. He bought the Beatles for $12 million. After they killed him, they sold it for $2 billion. That's white supremacy. Mm-hmm. Nigga, you can't own this.
Well, this may be unrelated. I don't know. It just happened yesterday as we taped this, but Tupac's mom just passed away.
Yeah, well, the important thing about Tupac's mom is the movie that just came out last Friday with the number one acting guy in the world now.
Oh, Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks.
Hanks movie? Yeah. Building a hologram? The hologram?
The first person they used on a fucking hologram was Tupac after he died. When did you ever put that together? Mm-hmm. And then all at once, he's in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. Ain't nobody seen the king in 2 years, and the king show up, hologram. Mm-hmm. And then Tuesday, that bitch there. Huh?
Mm-hmm. Michael Jackson, I mean, you knew him. It seems like he needed that fix, that money. It was never enough.
It wasn't money. It wasn't about money. He didn't have no childhood. See, y'all always be trying to talk about shit you don't know. He didn't have a fucking childhood. Huh? All right? He had all the money he wanted, all the fame he wanted, huh? But he never bounced the ball, huh? So y'all gonna sit here and talk about somebody you ain't never talked to him, huh? Michael Jackson, huh? A child, his mind was a child. Came one of the most powerful human beings in the world, and they killed him. And when they killed him, this simple mathematics, he's getting ready to do the big show in London 50 times. God can't work one city 50 times. What made you think he could? And that childness in him, it never dawned on him. So he's insured. This is your show. So the insurance is on you, not the rest of the people. So they had him insured for $1.5 billion. So when they killed him, you mean the Lords of London didn't see them holes in his arm? Lords of London? $1.5 billion, and they didn't see these holes? You know? Michael was killed at 2 o'clock in the morning from a laser. What's the police chief? He's not police chief of New York. That Patton? Whatever his name
is. I was thinking Gates, but that's before.
No. And then 4 days later, they go into the house and find this bloody shirt of Michael's. And they understand it's like $450,000 worth of jewelry and cash missing. So white boy said, we got to get rid of you, but we'll ease you out. So then he comes and he works in Virginia, which is called the CIA, and now he's the police chief of New York, a fucking criminal. Gangster. That's what it's about.
Well, I thought it was because of the Sony thing. They wanted, I believe there was some...
Well, that's because you don't have the information.
Okay.
Huh?
Okay.
I said he was killed by a laser. Mm-hmm. Huh? I just told you it was a bloody shirt and the money. Just public, all you gotta do is go look it up. Huh? Okay. I didn't come here to find out what you think.
No, I'm just asking.
No, you didn't. You say you thought.
I'm not interviewing you. You interviewing me? I don't want to hear it.
Okay.
Huh? But you go do it. I respect who you're going to be. So don't sit here and tell me you thought it was the Sony thing. Huh? Okay. What was the Sony thing about? Tell my grandmother.
Well, my understanding was that he was going to get the Beatles catalog.
He already had it. Huh?
Okay.
He bought the Beatles catalog when his people told him don't buy it. He bought it for $48 million. When they killed him, it was worth $2.5 billion. Huh? Mm-hmm. Huh? Stuff going in your house I don't know nothing about. There's a persona out there I don't know nothing about. But when we're sitting here with respect for one, I don't want to hear what you thought. Mm-hmm. I saw the check, nigga. Huh? Mm-hmm. So I got to sit here and what you thought. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Huh? That's all I'm saying.
I understand.
And then what he didn't know when they came out with the will, his three children's name was misspelled. Mm-hmm. Huh?
So
the day he was supposed to have signed it.
So it's a fake will.
It's a fake will. Huh? Mm. That's what I'm saying. Okay? That's all. And so if I was over there and he said, well, what role did Sony play? Mm. You didn't say that. I thought I'm not here because of what you think. Huh?
Okay.
Did Sony have anything? Huh? Huh? That's... Mm.
Okay, I'll ask
better. No, you don't have to ask that. I don't care.
No, I'll phrase better with the...
No, I'm saying you already said it.
Okay.
Huh? And you ain't going to stop that overnight. And I don't want you to stop it overnight. Huh? There's people listening to me that's cleansed when you said what you said. Huh? Because we know. Huh? I told Michael. I got to his house, man. His father called me and said, Michael, need to see you. Michael couldn't go up. His dad and mom couldn't go up to the top floor. Huh? So when they sat there and said, when I carried the food up to him, I saw these little boys. Michael knew. Everybody knew him. Couldn't nobody go up to the third floor. Huh? So I go and Orange County. Father come back and say, Michael want you to sit in my seat. I go. So now the trial's over that day. We go home. He holds me, feel like an animal clawing me. Craig, they're trying to kill me. They're trying to kill you, I know. I know. When the last time you ate, they poisoned me. When the last time you drank some water, I said, okay, here's the problem we got. I got to slip you out of here today and take you to the hospital. No, they'll kill. Michael, am I smarter than you? Shut up. What we'll do is get a driver and we're going to San Francisco to see a friend. What he didn't know is once we got out the house, when you saw that H for hospital, that's where I was going. I didn't know where. Nobody knew we coming. So we go there, 5 o'clock that evening. Michael Jackson, dehydrated. 6 o'clock, at 6 o'clock the next morning, they still putting water in him. The doctor said, thank God for you, because he'd have been dead. That's how dried up he was. Okay, I know him, huh? I know him. I know what it's about. Not about Sony. He already had it. Already had it. Okay? And so what happened is when they killed him, them white boys that came in and convinced everybody that Michael had went back with them. Michael had gone back with them. Okay? And so the will said that anybody on this wheel protested if you lose, you cut out. That's why Mama, I don't even know where she's getting groceries from now. She was cut out after. Now, just go back to the one thing. Lords of London got me insured for $1.1 billion. That means they give me all kind of checks and they didn't see the holes. Now here's how clever they are. You and the brother, there's first responders. You get there at 10 o'clock. He's out. You don't know he's dead because the call just come in. So you trying to get a vein. You don't know he's been dead since 2 o'clock. So now they tried everything. Now they go get the different chemicals I can put in. That's where the needle holes came from. Huh? That's how clever they are. The folks that's doing it don't know it. They're just trying to bring them out. They got needle in there. Sure, they got needle holes. But that's where they came from. Huh? That's where they came from. Okay? And the old punk doctor, he know nothing about it. When he's on the 911, they say, what's the address? I don't know. He didn't know the address. This is a game. The most powerful human being on the planet, entertainer. They say he killed. He ain't lost his license. He's still practicing that. It's a game.
So, something fishy there. I think I smell smoke.
Yeah.
Something like smoke.
When Tupac was killed, well, I know something. The mob don't go there and have a shootout in the front lounge. Would make you think black folks could. And who was in the car with him? Quincy Jones' daughter.
Well, she was? Okay.
How I know that, New York Times don't know. How I know that he'd been attempted to be killed so many times, the car is bulletproof. So you had to shoot through a bulletproof car to get him in the head. He was shot in the car. That's what this was about. That's what this was about. Shot in the car. Of course, he had nerve enough to write some shit in the record.
Yeah, be careful what you say to the government. We might be in trouble here. So we define the white folks as, so I guess, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, or is it like...
I don't get into that. I say white folks.
White folks, okay. White folks. So if...
And I know all white folks ain't white.
Okay.
Yeah. I tell white folks that. If you can't get on the phone and call the stock market and determine if you're going up or going down, you ain't white.
So, I mean, is there such a thing as an Illuminati? Is there an Illuminati?
If you know about it, it's not. That's bullshit.
Okay.
The real things that come, most black folk don't know about it. Illuminati, black folk can't even read or write, know about the Illuminati. What's that? Huh? It's like the Boule. Talk about black folks. Well, tell me what business they own. What company they own. Y'all sit around talking about the Boule, huh? What goes behind that? Okay? This is stuff they put out, man. It's a game.
Now, how deep does it run? I mean, you were talking about how the Starved Rock thing you talked about in the last clip, that encounter that you had, getting fame, like a lot of people watching it dream of the kind of success that you had.
That ain't number chump stuff, man.
Okay.
That ain't number chump stuff. Who was the number one baseball player in the history of baseball 100 years? You don't know. I don't give a damn about that. The word fan mean, it's a Latin word, fanatic. And while we talking about it, Notre Dame's playing somebody today. Georgia's playing Alabama. Whoever win, the white tune will tear up the town.
Right.
But it's okay to ride behind a silly game. But when you shoot my dad or my son in the back of the head 40 times, that's off limits. Okay? They do it all the time. Every time the game is won, I never understood why the winners ride. Okay? So this is the game. Martin Luther King will be remembered as long as somebody's on the planet.
athletic stuff. It's, I don't even mention their name.
Right. No, but I'm talking about in terms of, like, I read your book, Nigger.
Yeah.
And I read Callous of the Soul.
Yeah.
And I love both books. Yeah. I mean, you've led a fascinating life. But there seems to be a transformation. Like, at the end of Nigger, you're still riding the fame. Like, it's a success story in a way of that kind of reinforces the American dream. Like, I came from humble beginnings and I became
one. But that's you. I never said that.
Okay.
I never said that.
Okay, so what?
I've always been listed in the phone book. I never had a bodyguard. The filthiest people on this planet is athletes and entertainers, okay? You, with this show, have done more for the humanities than 99% of all the athletes and entertainers on the planet. But they've even tricked you to believe that you ain't nothing but doo-doo and they something big. They ain't nothing but a piece of shit, man. All of them, a handful of them, will break through, like Ali. Handful of them will break through.
Right, but what I'm getting at is that you traded it all. You traded all the money and the success and funneled it into the movement.
That was me. This had nothing to do with no damn coach.
Okay.
Huh? I wasn't controlled by white folks.
Okay.
Huh? Black folks made me. Man, I'm in a little club making $5 a night, 3 nights a week. Huh? When I wasn't funny. See? I was the laugh at the party. I was the party clown. Most black folks can do that. What's the difference in being that and a comedian? Timing, timing. What you doing here now? Hey, man, you can just walk in here and say, people sitting here, wow, man. No, you prepared for this. You knew what this was going to be about. You read the books, huh? Mm-hmm. So you just don't jump in here and start doing it.
Right.
Well, that's the same thing. With athletes, when I see football on Sunday, I see slavery all over again. The Negroes in the field picking cotton with a ball and the white folks sitting on the bench with a clipboard trying to act intelligent. Are you crazy? Hmm? So that's what this is about. But it's weak in spirit, weak in heart. Ain't nothing going for you. So I got to reach for something. My family didn't do it, my children did, so I got to reach at something, huh? And them children better not make no noise while that game's on. Hmm? Hmm? Dad said, be quiet. Hmm? That's what this is about. Don't nobody care about it. Hmm?
But do people want money and success, that illusion, so much that they're willing to sacrifice? I mean, like one of the things you said, I mean, you were in the belly of the beast at one point. You were playing everywhere, Jack Parr, Playboy clubs.
At one time, I was making more money than Frank Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
White folks didn't make me. The agents I was with didn't know about me until I was big. It's the black folks that came. $5 a night. Didn't cost nothing to get in. 35 cents a bottle of beer. You could sit through 3 shows. Why am I so powerful? I refuse to do the same show over the next show. So I can start flat-footed last night and done 12 hours. Hmm? I almost got out of show business, Dick Shawn. I went to see him downtown. I had to sit at the bar and I had no money. So I wasn't under no drink minimum. So I got there and I talked to the black guy that walked through the men's room that brush your shirt off. Wipe stuff off your shoes. So I came back the next night. He said, how'd you like the show? I said, I'm just sad, man. I decided last night I was gonna get out of show business. I saw this genius. He said, Dick Shawn? Yeah. Man, he been doing that same shit for the last 30 years. See, I didn't know that. I didn't know that white folks' time is too valuable to sit through 3 shows. Huh? So he been doing that same thing. He had a thing where you flip a cigarette. And when he get over there, cigarette falls on his lips. Now I don't see the ones he missed. Hmm? I said, wow, man. Cried. Hmm? Not jealous. Just, whew. And when he told me that, man, I didn't know that.
So I went back in the show business. Nobody knew. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew.
But the fame, I mean, like some people, they feel like you almost have to sell your soul to get fame. Or is it just hard work? Or, you know, is it luck? Is it consequence? Is it...
No. Most of us didn't sold our soul. We just called it something else. Mm-hmm. Hey, I don't know about you, but I know when I was young and the girls would go to pee and we'd put more whiskey in and stuff. So the next day, I don't know what got into me. I did.
Hmm? Right.
But it was black folks. I had to search this shit on my own. If I didn't bring a woman to the nightclub, I didn't leave with one. This is my job, not my hustle. If I was working at the steel mill, I can't bring no woman in there and play with her, huh? That's what this is about, man. That was me. Me. Huh? I'm no damn entertainer. Hmm? When I looked at Michael Jackson, looked at James Brown, that footwork, no envy. No envy. I knew Michael better than his family. I put Malcolm on a 30-day water fast. Hmm? 30 days. Nothing but water. Hmm? And all he talked about is to James Brown. Not out of envy, but out of respect. And then one day, after 39 years, he went on the other side of the moonwalk. Hmm? The moonwalk. My 3-year-old grandchildren can out moonwalk Michael. Because once you break the lid off, then everybody jumps through. Hmm? That's what that's about.
Right. Hmm? And you kick that door open. Just to go back, was there a moment of breakthrough? Like, I just, you know, I'm just trying to see that rise, and then at what decision did you decide that enough, it was enough for you?
I didn't. No? I didn't. I didn't know nothing about show business. I didn't know that no black comic could work white nightclubs. I didn't know that. Hmm? And so, 100 years ago, there was Richard Pryor's. There wasn't no place they could work. The black church, if it wasn't for black churches, we wouldn't have been able to act. We did the Christmas play, the Easter play, huh? Mm-hmm. We wrote stuff for the church, huh? And then Hugh Hefner, little pipe-smoking dude, looked like Popeye. Hmm? When 98% of clubs was owned by the mob, he brought me in. Huh? Them black folks had listened to me when I wasn't funny, and I got so funny, they pushed me downtown where they couldn't afford to come see me.
Right.
Huh? I owe that. So I've always been listed in the phone book. Huh? Mm-hmm. I've never had a bodyguard. Huh?
Right.
This is my loyalty. If I didn't bring you in the club, I'm not bringing, this is my job.
Right. But did they, were you ever seduced by the fame and the lights and the money, or?
Didn't have to be.
Okay.
Huh? See, I knew this. I knew I was going to hit big. I knew that when I was a little boy. I knew it for two reasons. One was embarrassing. My mother believed in fortune tellers. I thought it was ignorance. Never forget Mother Poole. Miss Lillian, you got a son named Richard. Say, next Tuesday, take him out of school, bring him here at 1 o'clock. I keep feeling something. I was so embarrassed, man. 7 years old. She said, your name Richard? I said, yes, ma'am. Said, how come you don't like me? I said, I think you're stupid. I think my mama's stupid. She said, well, I just want you to know there's a star in the center of your head. And one day you gonna be one of the biggest people in the world. One day kings and queens and powerful will be calling you. 7 years old. Mm-hmm. And say money, you'll have more money than some countries. Mm-hmm.
And I said, I see it happening. There's a brown briefcase. Well, you way back then, I'm born 1932, man. But I got no briefcase. Our luggage was shopping bags. You get on train with shopping bags. With your stuff in it. So a guy came to me from ABC, and they was doing it. Imagine you, the first network, you. ABC. Did a thing called Walk in My Shoes. That was the first thing in the history about the black folk problem. So they came to the club and taped it, and whew, man, you know how happy I was. I didn't know the power. They take 3 hours, I had 2 seconds, and the world went crazy. That's the power. Crazy. So I bump into Alex Dreyer, who put it together, and said, oh, Dick, I'm gonna tell you, oh, let me tell you the letters. Millions, huh? Oh, and by the way, I got this gift for you. Do you got time? We might get it now. I got it, carry it home. It's a brown briefcase.
Mm.
2 weeks later, I'm on top of the world. Top of the world. I said to my wife, I said, you know, I feel something. But black folks, when they make money, they owe themselves $1 million worth of treats just to store it unmessing up their mind. That's what I did. That song, not for mama, not for daddy, but for me, oh Lord, huh? I was trying to get that stuff out of my head. My head. Give me some booty. Then I started doing the research. Booty is a pirate's word for the loot. Let me show you the loot. I'm going to get me some booty. The black woman in America ain't never been freed. So it's booty. Nobody told us that. We don't know why we even said it. Hey, man. It's a game. And sometimes you fall into something. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get there and you get caught doing things that you're not supposed to do. You got people that get fired from their job because they hit on the master's son. The whole game.
And somebody's keeping track of everything you had to do.
They don't have to.
No?
No, they didn't have the stuff they got now. They didn't have to. That's why, you know, if you believe ISIS ain't us, you're a fool. You're crazy. If you believe them black pirates 3 years ago, Somali, they don't have 5 yachts in the whole country, but they taking on the greatest navies in the history of the planet, and we go for that. Why not? Why not? That's a game. It's like when I was a little boy, if you were colorblind, you couldn't go in the military. That's what black folks, it was a job, man. Medical insurance. So one day, the Air Force, there was no Air Force, and they found out colorblind people couldn't see camouflage. So right now, if you was colorblind, you can't read it right, never been to school, you go in as a captain making $1,000 more a month than a real captain. Because when you look over there, you see the shit. Here. Now, the bull is colorblind. So what's the red towel about?
No, I never thought about it.
Yeah, okay. So, red turns on men and blue turn on women. That's why the prostitute area around the world is called the red light district. Red. That's why when this thug took a woman's lips that's cut like the vagina, except it go this way instead of this way, and painted red, and she wondered why you looking at her. When the FBI Hoover brought in the whole set Dillinger up so they could kill him, She's called a woman in red. So now let's go back to the bull. Bull don't see color. Who sees it? The man. That make his joint hard, so he stands there and get closer and closer and closer. That's what this is about. That's what this is about. So when you start looking at and then go deeper, white folk didn't see me. I was invisible. So I said, well, I'll make you see me. He didn't learn this at Harvard, Yale, Morehouse. So I put on the red shoes, the orange hat, the green light jacket, and white folk laughed at me. I said, I won this one. And all the laughing, me quacking, you got to see me. You got to see me. You never saw me before. I didn't know why I did in this universe. Artificial intelligence have taken over, and there's a handful of people that know that. That's what it is.
So we've already seen the convergence, when technology catches up with human.
Oh, it's been caught up now.
Okay.
Been caught up. And that might be what they did. They might decide we got to get off this planet. You know, we discovered something here we didn't think we was going to discover.
I want to get to the chat room. Somebody asked a question I think is interesting. I've been hearing this among people for a minute now. I'm not sure about, you know, what's going on. But somebody wanted me to ask you about your views on Minister Louis Farrakhan moving to Scientology. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, I've heard about it, yeah.
And what are your thoughts about that?
Huh?
About him going on to Scientology. What are your thoughts about him going to Scientology, moving towards that way?
Slow up, I don't hear you. I heard him say somebody wanted to ask me about that.
Your views on Minister Farrakhan.
And then what did you say after that?
Moving to Scientology, and why has the media not reported on it?
Well, a lot of stuff the media don't report because you're not on their radar. You know? Or maybe they're trying to hide the fact. But see, the reason I can't comment on, I know him. I haven't seen him, you know, to discuss it with him. But the other thing is, you know, you should call. You got people, your listeners want to know. First, you got to tell people what Scientology is.
Yes, sir.
They don't know what Scientology is. It's this white thing aimed at white folks. And where it came from is when Hitler and the Nazis lost the war. Head of Naval Intelligence was Hubbard, remember? Who wrote the book?
Ron L. Hubbard, that's his name, I believe.
Ron L. Hubbard, yeah.
Okay?
He got up all of Hitler's mind control research and copied it. And turned the originals in to the United States government. He kept the copies, and out of that came Scientology. It's a mind control thing. And that's why the Germans, I mean, if the Germans find out that Minister Farrakhan had and could prove it, he could never come into Germany. That's why no movie that the Scientologists had anything to do with is permitted to be shown in Germany.
Wow.
But first, the fact that Farrakhan is alive, and somebody should take the time to run him down and say, well, we'd like to know, is it true? That has to be true first.
Right.
Is it true? And is there a reason? And then we go from there. Yeah, thank you.